Good morning, afternoon. This is Truth Quest with Melody on Oracle Broadcasting. And I have another great lineup of guests and a co-host today that I think is going to make a very interesting program. And my co-host this morning is Andrew Johnson, and our guest is Jay Widener. And I would like to mention that Oracle Broadcasting has a donate button on their website at oraclebroadcasting.com. And if you'd like to support Oracle, and please support the sponsors on Oracle so they can continue to bring the fine programming the staff has brought forth. And there's also the programs that are archived and available to listen to or download for later on the Oracle Broadcasting website. And I would also like to mention I do another radio program called Truth Quest on my local low-power FM station streamed at khen.org on Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Mountain Time Zone. And those interviews are available on my website at www.gimmesometruth.info. And I would also like to state that we do have a call-in number for questions with our guests or during the program, and that's 866-841-1065. And we do have a chat room, too, that's under Truth Quest on the Oracle Broadcasting site. So I want to say hi, Andrew, and hi, Jay.
Hiya.
Well, do you have anything you want to say, Andrew, before we go ahead and let Jay come in and add anything to I didn't even do the introduction. So I'll let you guys talk just a second, and then I'll go ahead and introduce Jay here.
Well, I just say thanks for inviting me to sort of come on the program with you, Melody, and it'd be interesting to listen to Jay. I've listened to sort of several of his presentations and found them very, very interesting. So, yeah, I'm very interested in this.
Okay. And then I want to say that Jay is called by Wired Magazine an authority on the hermetic and alchemical traditions and erudite conspiracy hunter. And he's a renowned author, filmmaker, and hermetic scholar, considered to be a modern-day Indiana Jones for his ongoing worldwide quest to find clues to mankind's spiritual destiny via ancient societies and artifacts. His body of work offers great insight into the circumstances that have led to current global crisis. He is the producer of the documentary films 2012, The Odyssey, its sequel Time Wave 2013, and the director of the forthcoming feature documentary Infinity, The Ultimate Trip. And Jay has been featured on the History Channel documentary The Lost Book of Nostradamus, and was associate producer and featured in the History Channel's special Nostradamus 2012. And he's got plenty more here to add to this, but I just want to state, if there's more that you would like to add, and then go ahead and tell us your website and how to get a hold of any of your work, do so, because we've got about 45 seconds before we go into the first break.
All right. Well, actually, Infinity, The Ultimate Trip is out. It's been out for about a year. That's an older bio. I got to update that. My new film, Kubrick's Odyssey, Secrets Hidden in the Films of Stanley Kubrick, is out right now. It's my newest film. And you can find that at sacredmysteries.com or Amazon or anything like that. And if you want to read my High Weirdness articles, go to Jay Widener, JAYWEIDNER.com. And also, Sacred Mysteries has a new film out called Radical Truth with David Icke, which I think is his best film ever. So
hey, we have two new food working out for you. You like it?
Well, welcome back to Truth Quest with Melody on Oracle Broadcasting. And I think I've got a great co-host and with Andrew Johnson and Jay Widener as our guest, who I think is going to take us into some interesting arenas. And I found it kind of amazing that I've actually found a guest that other Oracle co-hosts haven't been interviewing before, because I think he has a lot of subjects that fit right in with some of the subjects that are covered on our network. But one of them being your work with Stanley Kubrick, and I was just listening to an interview that the boys from Red Ice had done with you, and I would love to hear and let you just start right in on some of the information involved around that, because I thought I was kind of up on that, but you just added a whole nother new dimension to it for me.
Well, yeah, it's a very interesting story. In fact, as I got into the entire story of Stanley Kubrick, I realized that I was actually dealing with one of the central players in a secret drama that really is probably the most important drama of all. And it involves the idea that the German scientists working under Hitler in World War II developed extremely advanced craft that was later taken under the umbrella of the U.S. Department of Defense and also the Soviet Union. And there may have even been a third party somewhere like in Argentina or Chile also developing these craft. And Kubrick, who was really just trying to make a science fiction movie, 2001 A Space Odyssey, hired Arthur C. Clarke, the great, probably in my opinion, the greatest science fiction writer of all time, and to write the screenplay with him, unbeknownst to Stanley, at least at the time in 1963, early 64, he did not realize that he was being brought into a nest of secrecy, cover-ups, in which he was going to be asked to hide this technology by faking the moon landings and showing the world that the United States got to the moon and back six times without a glitch, using standard rocket technology, which in a lot of ways is extremely absurd. It's one thing to go from the Earth to the moon and back with rocket technology, but to land on the surface of the moon successfully and take off six times without a hitch is just about the most impossible thing ever, especially when you consider that they've never tested the lunar lander except for one time, and the one time they did test it, it nearly killed Neil Armstrong, who was piloting it, when it went out of control. So they landed on another planet with the technology that they'd never tested successfully, certainly never tested it successfully on another world with other types of gravity. The whole idea that the United States would allow the open filming of astronauts who might crash land on the moon, in which the entire world would have to suffer through 7 or 8 days of watching them die of starvation, thirst, and radiation exposure, makes me go to the conclusion that, of course, the United States would show what they showed us was fake, but that does not mean that they didn't go. They did go to the moon. There's reflectors on the moon. They brought back moon rocks. They've done all sorts of things on the moon, and but what they showed us was fake, and Stanley Kubrick was hired to fake it. And in my new film, Kubrick's Odyssey, Secrets Hidden in the Films of Stanley Kubrick, I show how they did it, how Stanley faked it, and then I show how his movie, The Shining, is not a Stephen King novel, although it is. It's actually the story of the travails that Stanley went under as he was shooting the Apollo footage while making 2001 A Space Odyssey all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And together, it tells a story of what I call the secret space program, which is a program that has been going on since the 50s, right under our noses, in which the United States and its allies, including the Soviet Union, have created extremely advanced spacecraft and are much further along advanced than we think they are. At this point, they could be 500 or 600 years ahead of us, and maybe even more if Richard Hoagland is right. And Stanley knew about all this, and he tried to tell us in several different ways, basically through symbology, And in the end, he left time bombs inside his films, which are, have yet to be uncovered, of which I will uncover over the next year or so in the subsequent films I'm making. But he left time bombs in the films. The films are already out. They can't be retracted. And once the time bombs are revealed, then the truth of the human condition and the current world crisis will be easier to understand. And that's where I'm going with the entire trilogy of Kubrick's Odyssey.
Okay. Yeah, I was particularly interested because I watched the Kubrick's Odyssey, the first part recently, which somebody sent me. And I think I was really impressed with the way that you picked out and decoded a lot of the symbolism, which was, you know, I think, I don't know if it was you or somebody else said, that if you watch The Shining as a film, even not knowing about any of this, you can see there's something else going on in the film. It's not just a slightly changed version of the Stephen King novel. There's something very, very strange and deeply disturbing about it, and not in the sense of a normal horror film either.
And, no, that's right. In fact, in the next film, I'll be getting into that. Kubrick has taken The Shining and is really another entire movie, not even the movie that I'm describing in the current Kubrick's Odyssey, which is about his travails with the moon landing. But I mean, I'm telling you, he is telling you another whole story about evil, demonic aliens and sexual proclivities and the sexual vampirism. And he's putting it in the film, and you're literally watching this and not knowing it, which is why you feel so uncomfortable after the movie ends. When I first saw The Shining, I felt like I had to take a shower, and I wasn't sure why. I didn't even like the film, but there was something about it that made me feel dirty, and now I know what it is, and he's putting subliminal imagery all through the film, telling us another story, an incredible story.
It does, you know, it makes me wonder when I watch something like that how he could possibly have made it and how he could have achieved that. And there was a YouTube clip that I saw, and it was basically somebody had isolated these audio artifacts in the film where somebody says the word Sean. And there's about 10 of these instances throughout the film.
Let's carry this on the other side here.
Absolutely.
Not for break. Welcome back to Truth Quest with Melody on Oracle Broadcasting. And our guest this morning is Jay Wagner. And fun interview. We've already started to dig into some real interesting aspects that I wasn't even aware of. Stanley Kubrick. And I'll go ahead and let Jay just step right in. Unless you had something to finish up on, Andrew, when we had to go to break.
Yeah, well, I was just mentioning that I'd come across, you know, a little bit of extra information in The Shining film, which I don't think was on Jay's DVD, and it was about these audio artifacts in the film, and there's various points in the film where the audio volume subtly changes, and it's very subtly, somebody seems to have said the word Sean, and this was meant to be referring to the process of shining, and I wondered if you could explain, you know, if that ties into the title of the movie or what that is.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the work of Sean Montgomery, who's a friend of mine, and Sean has found I've heard him too, and it appears you might even think there were mistakes if you didn't know that Stanley was a perfectionist. But all through the film, you do hear these very odd sounds and commands and things, and a lot of them appear to be Stanley, actually, talking. And it's almost as if the ghosts of the Overlook are speaking, although it's very odd and very strange, but as Sean Montgomery has shown, as I found out, what it really is this is a huge cipher, and it has to be back engineered. And so when you take the things that are clearly being said on the soundtrack, you can see that it's a series of commands. and the commands are for you to go to other parts of the film and keep looking. And that's really what's going on in that film. And you have to understand, when we're talking about Stanley Kubrick, we're talking about a guy with like a over 200 IQ, a guy who was so bored in school that he, by the time he was in sixth grade, he didn't even want to read the books anymore. He was a chess champion and could have been the next Boris Spassky or Bobby Fischer, actually, they say. And you know, he got into films because he was originally interested in photography, which is where a lot of intellectuals who are into arts get into. But then, you know, you get bored with photography. Where you go? Well, you go to cinematography because now you're adding another dimension to it. And then the next logical thing is films. Mm. And I think he got into films just that way, and I don't think he really wanted necessarily to even be a filmmaker. He was just following an intellectual pursuit. But I think by the time he got to Barry Lyndon, actually, by the time he finished Barry Lyndon, he was utterly and completely bored with filmmaking. He had done everything possible that he wanted to do. He'd created the ultimate science fiction movie. He created the ultimate cinematography movie in Barry Lyndon. And I think that he didn't know what to do. And so he sat down and he started trying to figure it out. And he looked into subliminal seduction, which is a form of advertising where they slip sexual imagery into the paper, print, and video and film ads, which supposedly make you want to buy the product more. I don't know, but I know they're really creepy. And Kubrick got into this, and that's what he's doing in The Shining. Is The Shining is literally filled with hundreds and hundreds of subliminal imagery that is sitting right underneath the top imagery, the front imagery. And this subtle imagery is all sexual in nature and extremely graphic, actually. The Shining should have been rated XXX, actually. There's all sorts of shocking scenes, which will be in the second Kubrick film, which are deal with pedophilia, homosexuality, all sorts of strange sexual practices. And when you put it together, the thing that he's saying, especially in The Shining, is that we are ruled by a secret group of people. We hope they're people. And they are sexual vampires. And they're drawing our sexual energy out of us, leaving us lifeless husks. And that is his message. That's not just the message in The Shining. It's the message in Lolita. It's the message in Eyes Wide Shut. And it would have been the message in his last film, which he didn't make, AI. And that is the most important thing of all, and that will be really the explosive part of number two, Kubrick the Magician.
Mm. And I just mentioned in break there that, you know, I was interested in the role of Arthur C. Clarke in 2001 and how that sort of, you know, how he came to write the novel and what sort of areas of, shall we say, esoteric knowledge that Arthur C. Clarke had, and you know, and then again, you know, I've had an interest in Iapetus from Richard Hoagland's piece that he did a few years ago on Iapetus when the Cassini probe went into orbit around it, and clearly Arthur C. Clarke seemed to know something about Iapetus because he put it in the novel, and then they changed it.
That's right.
To Jupiter. So I don't know if you could, you know, give us your thoughts on those things.
Well, it's a lengthy subject, but basically, if you back engineer like Skull and Bones and a lot of these secret societies that seem to rule the world, they all go back to Germany. Actually, Skull and Bones directly goes back to Germany, but a lot of the other ones do too. And when you go to the groups that these secret societies came out of, these German groups, they're all associated with a group called the Saturnian Society, or the the Brotherhood of Saturn. And they're obsessed with Saturn for various reasons, of which we can get into later. And Wernher von Braun, Hermann Olbruch, all these guys were members of this Saturnian Society. And the Saturnian Society is dedicated, presumably, to the god Saturn, who is also Kronos, which is time. Saturn is also the Grim Reaper, who uses his scythe to harvest souls at the end of time. And all of this is connected to Gnostic ideology, and what's interesting about this, leading right back to Arthur C. Clarke, is that the book Childhood's End, which is the greatest science fiction novel ever written, is Gnostic theology. I mean, it is. The entire book is one long Gnostic thesis. And Kubrick must have read Childhood's End, and like I, been completely blown away by it. And maybe, possibly, he wanted to make Childhood's End, but couldn't do it because of the effects and the amount of money and everything, and chose to actually do a slimmed down version of it in 2001, A Space Odyssey, which is also a Gnostic drama. So we realize that underneath this whole thing is this Gnostic theology, which is driving these secret societies, and Saturn is at the apex of this alternative theology to our Western theologies. So these guys are obsessed with Saturn for some reason, and once you add in the fact that they had extremely advanced craft, and I mean that sincerely, I was told by a person in high up in
Jay, we're gonna have to cover this on the after the break. This is it's hard to take these breaks when you're getting into this kind of stuff. Welcome back to Truth Quest with Melody and my co-host Andrew Johnson and Jay Widener. And Jay was just fixing to get into some information he'd gotten from a NASA scientist. Is that right?
Well, we're talking about sort of Arthur C. Clarke and the Saturn connection, and how that seemed to be linked into this whole sort of arena, which is a whole complicated story. But yeah, if you could talk about Arthur C. Clarke and how that links into Arthur, and then the mention of the NASA information that you were given.
You know, you're bringing up a good point. It is a convoluted story. So let me just take a couple minutes and try to give make it not so convoluted. So here's how it goes. This is the alternative history that is being discussed here. There was World War II. The Germans developed some very, very serious craft. And you can read Joseph Farrell's books if you want, especially The Brotherhood of the Bell, if you want to understand all this. Using ancient alchemical methods, they achieved a very, very fast craft that could go from here to the moon in about 20 minutes. And they developed this by the late 40s. And all the early UFO reports of the UFOs over Washington, D.C. in 1952 and all these other things, these are those craft. I'm not saying there's not aliens or anything. I'm just saying that the craft we started seeing after World War II, in most cases, were these craft developed by the German scientists, perfected by the Soviet Union and the United States. By the time Stanley Kubrick started making 2001 in 1963-64, these craft were extremely advanced, and they had been, according to this alternative theory, many, many places in the solar system already. And I was told by a top NASA guy, anonymously in 1994, that they had been to the moon by 1954, and they had been to Mars by 1959. Now, I was told this in 1994 and absolutely did not believe it, thought that this guy was setting me up, or that he was just lying, or he was drunk, or I don't know what. And now I believe it. And I believe it because of the fact that in the book 2001, A Space Odyssey, Arthur C. Clarke and Kubrick had the monolith out on the moon Iapetus, a Saturn moon called Iapetus. And Kubrick claimed that he couldn't do Saturn very well, the rings, and so he changed the planet in the movie to Jupiter and then just had the monolith revolving around Jupiter. Well, I think that that Arthur C. Clarke knew that they had already been to Iapetus. He knew there was something very strange about Iapetus, and please, for those who are skeptical, go look up the article Moon with a View by Richard Hoagland and get your mind blown by the Cassini photographs of Iapetus, which is definitely artificial as far as I'm concerned. And I think they knew this. I think they know a lot more, and I think they were feeding back. Arthur C. Clarke was hanging out with these German scientists trying to get them to go from Germany to NASA via Operation Paperclip, and he knew. He was up there in the upper realms of it. And Kubrick, who's only 32 years old at the time, 33, something like that, he's hanging out with all these guys in their 50s and 60s who are these top scientists and everything, and he's blown away by what he's discovering. And he then, at that point in his life, Kubrick becomes obsessed with Nazi memorabilia, Nazi technology. He spends almost all of his time and money buying up as many Nazi books, memorabilia, all the things that he can. Interestingly enough, at the same time period, he has married his wife, Christiana, who's German, and her brother, Jan Harlan, who's a member of the Harlan family, which is a big German aristocratic family, becomes his producer. And so there's this whole German connection to Stanley himself, right in his very home, in his estate outside London. All these Germans are hanging out, and I think that I know that he knew about the secret space program. And if you think about the film 2001, the whole entire mission to Jupiter on board the Discovery is, it's an open, it's not a secret mission, but the purpose of the mission is secret. So he is telling you that they're on a secret, they're doing secret things on the moon, in outer space. And also, they're hiding the fact that they found a monolith on the moon, and they're making up a story about there being an outbreak of a disease or a virus on the moon to cover it up. Again, they're consciously covering up these discoveries because they don't want anybody to find them. And this is what Kubrick is telling you. This is the basic story. And this goes into even the film AI, where the balloon, which is carrying the people who are shooting the robot creatures, are in a balloon that looks just like the moon, implying that, you know, the moon is occupied and that it's some kind of ship, which it is. And so Kubrick is deftly telling us a story that is the truth disguised as fiction, especially with the subliminal imagery. And let's, you know, not forget that Arthur C. Clarke is a not only a brilliant science fiction writer and hanging out with all these brilliant German scientists, but he's also a notorious pedophile and wrote articles advocating the legalization of pedophilia. And again, Kubrick is obsessed with this subject of pedophilia, not just in Lolita.
When were those articles published? Where did Arthur C. Clarke get those articles published?
Those were published in the London Times.
Really?
So you can Google it in.
Wow.
He wrote in the leading London newspaper for the legalization of pedophilia in the 90s, or could even be in the 2000s. It was right before he died. Yeah.
Wow.
And he was an open admitted pedophile. And so Kubrick is seeing this, and he's And some people will say, well, maybe Kubrick was part of the whole deal. And I do think that Kubrick did get sucked into it a little bit. But I think in the end, and I will prove this in The Shining and the next film, it's obvious he's completely horrified by this whole thing. And and that is why he's hanging out in his estate there at St. Albans without coming off his land, walking around the acreage with a loaded shotgun, shooting at people. You know, he wasn't a recluse as much as he was just paranoid. And he was paranoid because he's telling us in The Shining that his wife found out, Christiana Kubrick found out what he was doing in the moon landings. And so she wasn't supposed to find out. No one was supposed to know. And she found out, so he's protecting her, too.
Also, there was that movie that was made, I think, in 2003. It's called Dark Side of the Moon by a couple of French guys. I don't know what if you could give us some information on that, because what really struck me, the thing that struck me about that film particularly, was that it had Henry Kissinger, Donald Rumsfeld, I think it was Alexander Haig, I can't remember his first name, and they're all in some office having a drink, and there's one scene where they're just absolutely cracking up laughing, and it seemed like a very intimate sort of portrait, and I'm thinking, well, how did the producers get this level of access to these people? You know, this was made in the late 90s.
Yeah. Well, how long do I have before the break? Because that's a very interesting story.
Okay, it's about 90 seconds, so.
Oh, good. Well, that film, Dark Side of the Moon, which you can watch on the Internet, I believe is a CIA-created film in order to obscure the very relevant facts that Kubrick actually did do the moon landings. And when the evidence was discovered by people like me of the front screen projection process, which they saw the fingerprints of just as surely as I did, they created that film as a cover-up. Now, those films of Rumsfeld and Kissinger are not really about the moon landings. Those were very, very cleverly cut stuff. But what's interesting about that movie is the interview with his widow, Christiana Kubrick, in which she admits, A, that Stanley has secret files, and B, that NASA freely gave him the lenses that he used for Barry Lyndon, which is very odd, since they were $250,000 lenses, to give $500,000 in lenses to Stanley for nothing strikes me as very odd. And you can see that Christiana on her face, that she's actually, you know, smirking and telling you that, you know, there's something else going on here. And I think that they got this footage, they realized that Christiana knew a lot more than she was saying, and they created the whole rest of the film to obscure, obfuscate, and destroy.
Okay, it's on the other side.
You hear the news.
Well, welcome back to Truth Quest with Melody on Oracle Broadcasting. And this interview is really fascinating to me because it can go off in so many different directions and it'll all come back together, but it appears like it's just going all kinds of places. And so, Jay, you want to pick up to where we left off, or?
Where did we leave off?
Let me credit.
Well, we're talking about the Dark Side of the Moon video and Christiana Kubrick, and how that was probably a CIA disinformation operation. I noticed at the end of that some of the players in that were revealed as actors reading a script, and that just kind of I was my head was done in by the end of that video.
Well, I'll tell you what really I think went on there is I think that Kubrick, they shot the interview with Christiana right after Kubrick died. Okay? And I think that they, you know, they may have noticed some of the things in The Shining or whatever, and they decided to send a film crew in, a CIA film crew, to interview Christiana and find out if she knew anything. Because then that would be a very big problem, right? And so they did, and they went in there and they interviewed her, and they found out, in fact, she did know things. And so that worried them, They didn't know what to do, so they concocted the whole rest of the film around that interview to diminish everything that she says in the interview, which it does. And so nobody pays any attention to what she's saying. They throw the whole film out because it's obviously a fraud and a fake. So therefore, whatever Christiana Kubrick is saying in the film is a fraud and a fake, when actually the most interesting things in that pseudo-documentary are what she is saying. And she's really letting the cat out of the bag, as far as I'm concerned. And in a way, that's what led me to The Shining, because I realized that she did know that Stanley did not hide it from her, and I wondered how that affected their relationship. And then, you know, a few months, about 2 years ago, I bought my Blu-ray edition of The Shining, and I didn't really want to watch it because it kind of makes me ill, the film. And I turned it on one time, didn't have anything to do, and that's when I saw the entire real story underneath the other story and realized that the two most important things that happened to Kubrick, to him personally, was one, the interview that he had with the head of the U.S. government who asked him to do it, and the second most important thing to him personally was when his wife accidentally discovered what he was doing. And those are the two scenes that he absolutely lingers upon in The Shining. The interview with the manager of the Overlook, and the scene where she discovers that he's just writing the same sentence over and over and over and over.
I think it's worth it. It's worth mentioning exactly what those two things are. I mean, the first one is the meeting with the Overlook. The guy looks quite a bit like Jack Kennedy, doesn't he? And you know, if you want to mention that.
Yep. He's where Barry Nelson's wearing a toupee, which is exactly the hair that Kennedy has. And actually, Barry Nelson looks a little bit like Kennedy. And also the scene where, which is not in the book, where Shelley Duvall finds Jack Nicholson writing over and over, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, which I decipher as Apollo 11 work makes Stanley Kubrick a dull boy.
And, A11.
And then we get into the strange conversation between Shelley Duvall and Jack Nicholson after she discovers the book, which he says, do you have any idea what a contract is? Do you have any idea what an obligation to my employers is? And then she says, oh, Jack, what are you talking about? That's the key right there, right? She doesn't know. She doesn't know about his obligations. She doesn't know about his contracts. She doesn't know who his employers are. She's completely in the dark, yet in the movie context, that wouldn't make any sense. The only sense it makes is in the sense that he's hiding something from her. And that's exactly what it is.
That's right, because in the movie, his contract is to look after the hotel, but when he's doing that scene, he's actually involved in writing, which he doesn't have a contract for to anyone. Does it?
Exactly.
The situation of the movie, so.
Yeah, and it's really a fascinating movie, and I think in some ways he shot the load there. I don't think he was very interested in making films after The Shining. I look at Full Metal Jacket, which is a very good movie, but it's lacking his verve. And I think he tried to get it back in Eyes Wide Shut because he was back to a subject matter that he really did want to discuss and reveal. But unfortunately, he died 4 days after showing the cut film to the Warner Brothers people, and they recut it, and we don't know what's in Eyes Wide Shut. So the legacy of Kubrick really, in my view, ends at The Shining. And all we can do is try to pick up the pieces from Full Metal Jacket and Eyes Wide Shut and AI. And I do pick up enough pieces from those films, which I'll reveal in the next film, to show you the second thing that Kubrick is trying to tell us, which is that we're dealing with a cult of sexual vampires who rule the world, and none of us will ever be let into their group, because this group is so secretive, it's so elite, that there's no way to get into it. And my further research has shown me that this group of elitists, I don't know what to call them, they are in possession of knowledge that goes back 50, 60, 70, 80, 100,000 years. And there, and that knowledge is intact. It's not scattered or weird. It's intact. And they know what they're doing. They know where all the stuff is in outer space. It's a coherent plan to move out into space to create a breakaway civilization away from us, leaving us trapped here on the planet, and they ruling us from afar with their technologies and their weapons. And they may be dealing with alien races too, which seems to be implied. A group called the Archons.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that, actually, yeah.
Yeah, there's a subliminal story in The Shining also about the Archons, who are these sexual vampires. So the elites that rule us may not be 100% human. They may be our cousins or something. And they can definitely have sex with us and things, but they may not be 100% what we are. And, the Anunnaki or whatever you want to call them. The Archons, the Anunnaki, they're a very advanced group of people. They've shared the planet with us, and they use us as their slaves to create their, help not create their technology, to manufacture and build the stuff that they need to do what they want. And that explanation is one that actually helps explain a lot of the weird stuff that's going on right now on planet Earth. Why are they letting the nuclear power plants in Fukushima just go on and on and on? How come the whole world isn't running there and trying to help those poor people?
Right.
Why isn't Obama and Putin and the Chinese and the Australians, and why isn't everybody rushing there with anything that they can get to stop this from going on? But they're not. In fact, we have six plants melting down right now, and nobody's even reporting this in the news. And this is really important.
Very strange. Yeah.
Very strange. And even regular Joe Sixpack is beginning to wonder about it. And the thing is that, in fact, the elites have done all this on purpose. And when I say elites, I'm not talking like the standard Rothschild Rockefeller thing, because the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds are dying in the radiation right now too. So we can see that there's something above them that is allowing this to happen. And and these are profound questions. Are we being invaded? Are we being destroyed? These are the questions that we need to ask ourselves, and this is the kind of stuff that Kubrick was asking.
Yeah, I think also the idea of that seems to come into this somewhere is genetics, because there seems to be various lineages, and, you know, and I know it's sort of going off into a whole different sort of area, but we hear of the people that have done the research into the alien abductions. They often seem to follow in families, don't they? And they seem to, you know, from what I've read, they seem to be very interested in particular lines of genetics. So
they are. That's right. There's something there. There's some kind of trace blood, and I believe it's the Anunnaki that they're looking for.
We're going to have to cover this on the other side of the hour here, because we're coming up to the top of the hour. And, boy, we've opened a can of worms here, so. And it's all very interesting to me, so we'll join it in just a moment here.
All right.
And again, I've got a great co-host and guest with Andrew Johnson as co-host and Jay Widener, filmmaker and just researcher. And I'll go ahead and let you describe your website and everything you're working on, Jay, because I'll tell you, I'm having a lot of fun just hearing about so much of the different information and the directions that you have gone in your research. So go ahead.
Well, let's see. My films can be found at sacredmysteries.com, which is got a whole bunch of esoteric films by Terrence McKenna and Alberto Beoldo and David Icke and me and all sorts, Alex Gray and all sorts of people. And then they can read my articles at Jay Widener, JAYWEIDNER.com, which has got all my high weirdness in it. And basically, you know, just offering an alternative view to the standard view and trying to show that, message is that the human race is a lot more important than we've been led to believe, and we have a kind of a destiny and a mission. And the elitists, the archons, the Anunnaki, I don't know who they are, they've sidetracked us from what we are and what we really are, and our powers are beginning to atrophy because of this human slavery bondage that we've been under. And we need to break free and realize that we're incredibly advanced spiritual beings. In fact, we may be some of the most advanced spiritual beings in the universe. And we have incredible powers of telekinesis and psychokinesis and all sorts of powers that we have let atrophy because we've been told that we actually don't have these powers. And the people that have told us that we don't have these powers are the people who have power over us. And it's time for a rebellion, a spiritual rebellion against them. And that's what we're trying to foment. I make no bones about it. And the human race will not last much longer if we don't come to grips with both who is ruling us and what we really are. And I think that's really the mission that we're trying to achieve here at Sacred Mysteries, anyway.
Yes, I think that's a really interesting and very, you know, to me certainly a valid point. And I was listening to your presentation on the alchemy, one of the recent ones you've done with the alchemical, and you were right. Talking about the archons and that, mentioning, for example, that once you kind of knew what was going on, you know, you could sort of break free of this prison. And I suppose really the way I look at that is it's in terms of changing your consciousness and expanding your consciousness to take on board things like, you know, psychic phenomena and all these other things, and realizing how we've been manipulated to, you know, if you go back to the Middle Ages in England, and you know, we've got this phrase, you know, the phrase of a witch hunt, and that really plays right into this idea that anybody who had any kind of unusual abilities which weren't physical, you know, would be immediately taken out of society and interrogated and then killed.
That's right. It's a war against us, and we have to just come to grips with that. There's a war against us because we are extremely advanced beings, and they don't want us to know it. Mm-hmm. Now, why that's going on, I don't know. Is it part of the test? Part of making us better, or if it really is the evil archons, Anunnaki, enslaving us.
We need to finish this on the. We come back from break, and this
Oracle
I know we
broadcasting
can
radio.
Back, and we're getting into some interesting arenas with Jay on his research, and Andrew has a pretty good background in some of this stuff. If anything, just to be there to help. Get into some of these questions that Jay can kind of fill us in on. So, Jay, go ahead and, which one wants to go first on this one?
Well, I think we were going to talk about the slavery aspect of this, and I've heard Jay talk on another program, I think, about Kronos and how this was, you know, done through Saturn, or maybe you could tell us about that.
Yeah, well, Saturn is the god of time, or Kronos, and what happened to the human race is that when we lived for hundreds of thousands of years in a polychronic environment, which is time is relative to the moment. In other words, we didn't have to get up and go to work. We were mostly hunter-gatherers, and we just hunted and went to bed with the sun and rose with the sun and lived a diurnal lifestyle without any real concept of linear time. But about 5,000-6,000 years ago, it was invented by Sargon of Mesopotamia, time and calendars and clocks and everything. And this was done to create a cohesive civilization. we could all meet at the construction site at 9 a.m. so we could work, things like that. And so what was started out as a convenience and a sort of a good idea, I guess, of linear time, but which is not really real, it's just an illusion so that we can function better, we began to take literally. And we moved from a polychronic race to a monochronic race. And that was good for efficiency and for capitalism, but it's real lousy for everything else. And so we begin to only think about the future. We don't think about the present anymore. We always think that there's something better in the future. If we just keep working and struggling and striving, that there's going to be this thing that's going to be there, that's going to solve all of our problems. And this is also part of this slavery thing, not just monochronic time, but this idea that there's this messiah or this thing that's going to save us all. So you just keep working, don't look up, and don't worry, because some mysterious force is going to save you, and you don't have to do anything. And this is all contrivances of the slave masters, and Saturn is the god of linear time. But he's not just the god of linear time or Kronos. He's also the Grim Reaper. And he takes his scythe and he harvests the souls at the end of time. And so Saturn is both the slave keeper of time and the harvester, i.e. the vampire of souls. And when you begin realizing what this is, you begin realizing that we very likely are living on a prison planet in which we are being bred by an outside force for the sole purpose of devouring our souls when we die. This is the basis of the Gnostic religion, the very basis of the biggest religion on Earth 2,000 years ago, a religion that you cannot even find out and research in the universities because they don't even teach it. Or they're starting to now, but they didn't until about 10 years ago. So what? And why aren't they teaching this ancient religion? Why are there no followers of this ancient religion anymore? And the answer is very simple. Because they were all killed, every one of them. They were massacred and murdered, and their books were burned. This is what the Inquisition was about. They weren't after witches. They were after Gnostics. The witches were the obvious Gnostics, that's all. And the same thing when the church came to the Americas and they destroyed all the indigenous cultures. That was all done on purpose to make sure that the indigenous knowledge of who we really are never gets out. And the Cathars in the south of France preached that Satan had taken over the Catholic Church and that you were not to follow any of the rulers of this world because they were all alien archons. And that Jehovah himself was an evil alien war god. And this, of course, did not draw very many niceties from the Catholic Church. So they sent in 60,000 troops into the south of France and murdered everybody in the whole area, Catholic and non-Catholic alike, without caring about any of them. And where the famous line is, kill them all, God knows his own. And that was Pope Innocent III said that to the general as he was leaving to go kill everybody in the south of France. So you see a systematic destruction of the truth, the secret, and a raising up of a false time slavery of which we're all trapped in. And we may not be able to get out of it. We're in a dangerous period now where trying to get people out of linear time is, you know, very difficult. They can't function. And it's very sad because I think if people could go to a polychronic life, they would find a lot of the pressures going away, a lot of the stress going away. A lot of what we have, what we call stress, is actually a psychological reaction to the unnatural realm of monochronic time, of believing in sequential time. And that's really the only way the human race can free itself. We have to free ourselves from Saturn, from Set, who is also Saturn, who sets us in our ways. Saturn, Set, is also the name for Satan. And we can see that there's this odd way of looking at the world that we have taken up, which is actually completely unnatural. And once we go back to being natural people, then our innate psychic powers will return. And this is what the Archons, Anunnaki, the elites, that's what they're really afraid of. What they are so afraid of is that we're going to realize who we are, how powerful we are, and then use that against them to whack their ass, which I'm really hoping happens.
So in other words, this is why they're working so hard on to change us genetically and to put us in this drug-induced state.
That's right. They want all of us to be... Go ahead.
I was just going to say that another friend of mine who sort of familiarized me with some of your materials talked about the transhumanist agenda, and I think that sort of seems to play into what was shown in AI, you know, to turn us into robots, into organic robots.
Transhumanist agenda is the anti-Gnostic wet dream. To turn us all into automatons, to turn us all into monochronic slaves. And we're not that. We're natural. We're natural animals. We're natural spiritual beings. And we need to live in the natural world. And in the world right now, everybody is clamoring for community and love and all these things that they can't find anymore. And we have to ask ourselves, why have we lost all this?
Okay.
Who is it that has...
We're coming up with Greg again, because we're going to have to pick this up on the other side. Welcome back to Truth Quest with Melody. And we're talking with Jay Widener and my co-host Andrew Johnson. And we do have a chat room on the Oracle Broadcasting website under Truth Quest. And then we also have a call-in number at 866-841-1065. But we're getting into... We started out with Stanley Kubrick, and we've kind of gone off into the transhumanism. So, Andrew, did you have a question you wanted to read?
Yeah, there was just a couple of things. I was talking about this with a friend of mine, and he was kind of pointing out how there seems to be this agenda to turn everyone into robots. And certainly, you know, there's some recent pop videos that are showing, and, you know, TV commercials that are showing people changing from, you know, human form into gradually more robotic forms and this sort of thing. So we're being fed this subliminal imagery, and I know Jay has already commented on the AI film, so again what can we say about that side of things?
Well, I mean, you're right, that's what Kubrick is talking about, both with HAL, the computer who gains consciousness, and in AI, the little boy who actually gains consciousness. And Kubrick is trying to use this idea that machines can gain a form of consciousness, but what he's also showing us is that the humans are becoming robots. The humans in 2001 act robotically, and we can see the humans in AI, well, we don't know what he was going to present, but they're sort of a heartless group of people too. And I think he was very worried about us losing our humanness, which I am too, and this apparently is part of the plan, the Anunnaki Archon plan, is to drive our human qualities out of us. And the reason that they want to do that is because that being a human makes us a really lousy robot. And because we're essentially polychronic, we're not monochronic. Our natural state is not the state that we're in right now. Our human beings lived hundreds of thousands of years in a completely different kind of state. They were just like us, same brain size, everything, but completely different kind of world than we're living in now. And we smugly think that the world that we're living in is superior, but I say to you all that is wrong. The world that we're living in now is an artificial prison designed to atrophy our psychic and innate abilities, Once those are subdued, then we are very good robots. We follow orders. We do it very well. We're highly intelligent. And so this is by design. And time itself is the shackles of the slavery that they're using.
Yeah.
So where are you coming up? What is it that you're drawing your basis of this information from? Or is it a conglomeration of various aspects?
Well, I read a lot, and I'm fascinated with the Nag Hammadi, which are the ancient Gnostic texts found in Egypt in 1945, and I'm interested in those because no one's been able to put any spin on them. The Catholic Church, kings, rulers, politicians, they haven't been able to put any spin on them, and so those are the things that I find have credibility. I'm looking for anything that doesn't have any modern spin on it. And so I go to the Purana text from India. Again, they have not been spun by anyone. They're just translated from their oral traditions from the Sanskrit. And when I go to those texts, the ones that have not been screwed with by Westerners and by popes and kings, I find a completely different story of humanity than the one that I find regurgitated through the Western culture. And that is what, and I'm much more fascinated with that story. Also, J.R.R. Tolkien and Lord of the Rings. He got all of that from reading the medieval text in the basement of Oxford University. Again, had never been messed with by anybody because no one could read it but Tolkien, because he was a philologist. And his view of the world, or the ancient view of the world that he discovered in those texts, he succinctly puts down in Lord of the Rings and told everyone that this is not a metaphor or an analogy. This is the real history of Europe 6,500 years ago. And when I go through all these and I look at Lord of the Rings, I look at the Nag Hammadi, and I look at the Puranas, I see the same story being told. The story of an evil god represented by an eye whose name is Saturn, Sauron, Sargon. And he invented time to enslave humans. Notice the hobbits are polychronic in the movie. They couldn't care what time it was. But as you move into Sauron's culture or Saruman's culture, everything is regimented. Nature is being destroyed. And you see this great picture of this invading race, this invading group of people that have come from somewhere, and they're trying to control us. They're trying to remove us from the natural environment and turn us into their slaves. They did turn us into their slaves. And every time we try to rebel, they come down hard on us. And I mean hard, really hard. They kill everybody. And there's a rebellion brewing right now, and it's going to be very interesting to see what they do about this rebellion.
I think it's interesting, if I may just put in there, you know, the Lord of the Rings, the name of the novel series, and, you know, Saturn as well being described as the Lord of the Rings in terms of the ring system.
It
so
is.
That's an interesting
Saturn
sort of double
is the
meaning.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and the double meaning.
Saturn is the Lord of the Rings, and it controls time, and it binds you. It's a ring that binds you. Just like time binds you. The ring is time. And as Frodo gets closer and closer to Mount Doom, the ring gets heavier and heavier, i.e. it gets more dense. Because as you get closer and closer to the end of time, time gets more dense. It speeds up. It gathers weight. That's what's going on right now.
Yeah.
Is there a relationship then, when you're saying that it's a ring, are you saying that there would be an interest to go back in time or go forward in time, and that there's a potential possibility of doing this in the way that it works?
I don't know. I don't think you can. I don't think, because traveling back in time is actually, you have to travel back in space, because the Earth and the solar system were in a different place. So I'm not sure that you can go backwards and forwards in time, because then again you're caught in the linear sequence of monochronic time and thinking that you can go backwards and forwards. Time is like water, but what you can do is you can move through time. You can move sideways through time. In other words, we're in sequential time, in monochronic time, you move from point A to point B. Okay? In polychronic time, you can start moving from point A to point B, but suddenly you can take an orthogonal, that is at right angles, an orthogonal path going in another direction, and then you can come right back down to where you left in your linear time. You understand what I mean? In other words, you can leave linear time, go travel in polychronic time for a couple hundred thousand years, and then land right back where you were, and it only looks like a split second has passed. And this is the human destiny. This is what we can do. We can travel in polychronic time, and the rivers, the many rivers of time, instead of the single river of time, which they have told us is the only one that exists.
Okay, that's so, you're answering my question. Because I see the relationship, and it makes sense to me.
Yeah, and basically, it's like being on a canoe going down the river, and you're told that you can never go to the bank and get off. So you're stuck going down this river in linear sequential time, but what if you did pull over and looked around to see what was going on the bank? And that's what we can do. We can get off the cycle of linear time and move around in the landscape.
You're on the bank now. Speaking of slavery. Welcome back to Truth Quest with Melody and Jay Widener and Andrew Johnson. And we're trying to solve the ills of the world with its various subjects and see where, and at least exploring them. And where did we leave off, Andrew?
Well, I was interested in talking about bilocation. You know, when you get into these altered states of consciousness, and Jay was telling us about this idea of polychronic time, and how, you know, I wondered if that would be regarded as one example of moving in a different way through time, and also, you know, remote viewing. We touched on that in the break.
Oh yeah, that's exactly right. That's you know, we can explore our psychic powers, but only under the umbrella of the military industrial complex. Yeah. That's what remote viewing is. And so what is remote viewing? Well, you sit very quietly and you remove yourself from the 3D physical world and you rise up into the higher dimensional world, which can only happen when you quiet the body. And when that happens, and you find that you have amazing powers to move to other planets, to look into the past, look in the future, to get inside people's heads, to go talk to your friends, to be telepathic. Now, so if you can get into a state like that, if it's possible for everyone to get into a state like that, and you were trying to prevent people from getting into a state like that, what would you do? You would create a monochronic society in which everybody had to be at work at the same time, so there was everybody was on the roads going to work at the same time, so there would be as much mass confusion, as many disparate legends and histories that you could conjure to keep everybody in a total state of confusion, stress, and nightmare, so that they would never sit down, get quiet, calm down, and find out what kind of powers they really have. And that is the whole basis of the Archon trick, the Saturnian trick, to trap us into time. Not trap us into time so much to be slaves, although that is very useful, but to trap us into time to atrophy our natural abilities. So you get a guy like Sai Baba who could go into a deep meditative state and then bilocate and go from India to New York, buy a watch, come back to India, and you know, all in less than 1 minute, as has been testified by many people, and including the video camera at the watch store in Manhattan picking up Sai Baba buying a watch, even though everybody knew he was in the room in India meditating.
And when did this take place? What year was that?
Early 80s. My friend Paul William Roberts witnessed this, a famous Canadian Oxford-educated writer. He witnessed this and told me about it. Several other people have witnessed it. And, you know, this is a typical thing that we can all do. It's our destiny, and we are being robbed. They are stealing it from us. And if we don't rebel soon against it, we are all going to end up in some very, very starry shape, and I mean it. And so this is the only revolution there is. It's not going to be a rock-throwing, violent revolution. It's going to be a revolution where we reject monochronic time. We reject the Saturnian dictatorship and move back into polychronic, natural living, community, love, growing our own food, no children in wars, and where we can calm down and regain our own abilities, our own psychic abilities, and become really and truly one of the most awesome peoples of the universe, which is what our destiny is. And this horrible group is keeping us down. They want us to watch football games. They want us to cheer wildly when Osama bin Laden dies. They want that. There's nothing they like more than seeing 100 million people cheering for the death of one man.
Yeah, well, I think the odd thing is that we did see the repeated death of Osama bin Laden, but we were never told about his reincarnation. I mean, that would have been even more amazing. You know, that we would have the news of his reincarnation, because as far as I'm aware, he's now been dead about four or five times, isn't it? I mean, Benazir Bhutto said in 2007, just before she was bumped off, that Bin Laden had been murdered. So, yeah, it's very strange, and they do use all these tricks, and I think it's bizarre that we don't get more people sort of openly questioning this nonsense which comes out of the box in the corner. And I do hope more people will go over there and kick it in at the earliest opportunity.
Yeah, turn off your TV, for sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you want to be controlled, then leave it on all day long. But if you want to be free, you better turn that thing off, because that is their number one weapon against us.
I think the other thing that I was going to just mention, I know that you've spoken about this and probably written about it, is things like near-death experience, because to me that's, you know, when you look at the clinical studies of near-death experience, that's some of the best scientific evidence that we've got for us, you know, actually provably changing our state of consciousness, and then changing between the two states, the non-physical and the physical, you know, in the process of the near-death experience. And I think you've written quite a bit about that, haven't you?
Well, I have a film, Infinity, the Ultimate Trip, which is all about that, which I did specifically to get people to quit being afraid of death, because that's what the Archons, Anunnaki, that's the biggest trick of all, is to make you afraid of death when there's nothing to be afraid of. You're an infinite creature. You don't die. It's ridiculous. And to be not afraid of death is the greatest liberation of all. And if you can ever achieve that state, then you will find what liberation is really all about. And they can never do anything to you once you lose the fear of death. And that's one of the things that we have to do as a people. And this idea that you got one shot here, and that's it. And this is just a crime, a spiritual crime. And the Anunnaki Archons, they deserve some kind of spiritual punishment for what they've done to us, although I don't think it's up to us to deliver that punishment. But, what has been done to us as a race is criminal. Stanley Kubrick knew it. Arthur C. Clarke knew it. And it's time for us to know it so that we can rebel against it and overthrow their order. Because if we don't, they're going to destroy this planet. They're going to destroy us.
Well, my question is if we are what you claim we are, and then how did we ever get to this point in the first place then? What was it that took place that has put us into this?
That's a good question.
Mm-hmm, very good.
Well, the Anunnaki were living here with us, but they weren't really dealing with us, and we were left to do what we wanted. But they had decided to... they decided about 6,000 years ago to enslave us, and they enslaved us through, like I said, linear monochronic time, and they did that because they wanted us to do work for them. And this is very clear in the Sumerian texts and everything. And in order, but we didn't want to work. We're not that kind of. We don't even like to work. Humans aren't meant to work. Are you crazy? 8 hours a day? Are you nuts? Hunter gatherers worked about an hour to an hour and a half a day gathering everything that they would need for their existence. And we think that they were primitive. Well, we're working 8 to 10 hours, and with rush hour, 11 to 12 hours every day, and we think we're superior. It's really pretty funny, actually.
Well, if you have that potential to have the polychronic time as opposed to the monochronic, and then if we don't stop this, then ultimately the way they behave here, they're going to behave on these other planets. And if they want to use us, you know, here or elsewhere and transplant or take over these other societies, would it be not to our best interest to make sure they are unable to continue on?
Absolutely, and that is the ultimate rebellion, is to stop them from spreading this contagion everywhere. John Lash, who's a great Gnostic scholar and a good friend of mine, talks about the Archons not as beings, but as a virus. And I think that's actually a better way to look at it. It's like a spiritual virus, and it gets in us, and it infects us. And we begin thinking that, you know, the future, some great event in the future, is what we have to live for. And then they created religions which said that, hey, you can be a slave here your whole life, but guess what? When you die, there's this incredible place you're going to go to, which, you know, you'll be, you know, milk and honey forever, 72 virgins, and all this other stuff. And, you know, it's all just designed to keep you enslaved. And when we began figuring out this a couple thousand years ago, that we were being tricked because the Gnostics were spreading the word that this was a huge trick, then they invented the Messiah.
Okay,
so now
we've
got the Messiah.
Now we're coming up on break. Well, we're coming up on our last segment with Jay Widener and Johnson. And I've had a lot of fun on this because we're getting into some subjects that I'm always toying with in my thought process, and I'm going to let Jay take it from here because we're going to try to bring this full circle.
Well, let's see. For you people just getting interested in this kind of thing, the scenario runs like this. The human race was a very highly evolved group of beings who lived here for hundreds of thousands of years and were able to use our powers to travel around the universe, travel through time, to affect the actual fabric of nature, fabric of time and space. About 6,000 years ago, a group emerged, and this group needed us to work for them. And so, starting in Mesopotamia, i.e. Iraq, they began enslaving us through time, taking us out of polychronic time and moving us into monochronic time so that we could work every day, all show up at work for the work crews and building their monuments and everything. And they had a purpose, and their purpose was unclear to us. But as we get on in history, we discover what that purpose was. As we move forward in time, civilization begins sweeping the world. We begin removing people from their natural environment and putting them into cities. We begin removing them from polychronic time into monochronic time. Some of these peoples couldn't handle it, and they have been genocided. And some of these people can handle it, and they've become robots. And as we moved into the 20th century, this plan that they had moved into its final solution, which was to leave the planet. And they've left the planet. And now we are sitting here with a wrecked planet, caught in monochronic time, even though we know it's wrong. And there's no reason for the civilization that has been built up around us to even go on anymore, because the people that built the civilization, the creatures that built the civilization, have abandoned us. And that's why the economy is falling apart. That's why everything is falling apart. The central operating principle of civilization is no longer operative. And so their jobs are not coming back. The society, the civilization is not coming back. We're moving back into a polychronic world, and we're going to move back into that world very, very quickly. So Stanley Kubrick came into this in the late 50s, early 60s, and discovered this other society, this further advanced society, and rubbed shoulders with them. And they may have even removed him after he finished making Eyes Wide Shut because he was trying to tell us about this group of people. Since the 60s and 70s, a lot of scholars like Sitchin and others have come forward, Bramley, to discuss what the ancients have said about this group, and it all fits into a similar pattern. Whether you call them the Anunnaki or the Archons or whatever race you want to call them, they all have the same description, they all have the same attitude, and they are, right now at this point, we are on the verge of going extinct because these people have left extremely dangerous time bombs all over the world that are ready to go off, just like Fukushima went off. There's many more of these that are about to happen, and the organizing principle has disappeared, so we see that no one's trying to help anyone anymore. There's no overarching authority anymore, and we're on the verge of total collapse. And we need to use that, the key to that moment, to overthrow the powers that have been put in place to manage us and to move us back into our humanness, our humanity, in which cheering the murder of a person is repugnant. Living in pollution and a death culture is repugnant. We need to realize what is real and what is good and what is fake. And everything that they've given us is fake. It's a fake culture, fake religions, fake authority, fake death, fake everything. And we need to realize what's going on here. Wake up and get grooving. And if you want to do that, go to sacredmysteries.com. There are a lot of great DVDs to teach you how to do that. And go to jerrywidener.com. And look at the work of David Icke, Richard Hoagland, Peter Levenda, Joseph Farrell, any of those people, and you'll begin to put the picture together.
Do you have any questions, Andrew?
Well, yeah, there's probably a couple. I totally agree with the sort of thrust of what you're saying in terms of we have been enslaved and we have got these hidden abilities which we can use to break out of that slavery. And I think, you know, certainly my perspective on all of this is I think what we are trying to do, the three of us collectively, is raise people's awareness of these issues and encourage them to explore them for themselves, because that is the starting point for a lot of this. Because obviously if you don't know about something, you can't take any action about, you know, regarding it. And that might not necessarily be physical action. It may be a, you know, a conscious decision to change the way that you think, or not so much a conscious decision to do that, but learning certain things will change the way that you think, and it will change the way you react to certain situations, which at a consciousness level, you know, could have a bigger effect. And then you can start to break out of this conceptual prison which has been woven around you, and that's certainly something that I've been going through in the last sort of 7 or 8 years. But I think also the whole, you know, I've always been interested in technology, and I think, you know, one of the things that I've been involved with is the research into 9/11, and that we now know was done with technology. So, so I think, you know, that's another area of research that I think people should look into.
That's really true, because every time that we start breaking out of our out of their mold, they do another 9/11 on us.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And you're right, Judy Wood, her new book proves that they blasted the towers with hyperdimensional weapons, and this is what we've been building for them. Our genius built their stuff, and our creative genius. We are like a gold mine to them.
I think she doesn't talk about hyperdimensional, she doesn't mention that word in her book, but you know, but
that's
but
what she's talking about.
It's given various names, I think, and she does make a point of not using those names. But there's something going on with that side of the technology. Very, very important, and that has been very, very well hidden, I think, in this whole scheme of things. So, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I just want to thank both of you gentlemen in joining me on this conversation. I know there are those that think that we're kind of getting out there in our thoughts, but at the same time, if we don't explore those avenues, I mean, if what you're saying is true, they've been out there exploring these avenues that we haven't even thought of yet.
Absolutely.
So far, ahead of us in time. Poly or mono, as far as I'm concerned, that we need to get it together and start realizing it. We are the powerful beings and have a lot more power just being on our own. Instead of every time we try to organize, we kind of get waylaid. So maybe it is, you know, as individuals in utilizing that innate ability that we're born with.
I say to everybody, if you find this all hard to believe, and you should if you're a thinking person, I guarantee you, if you go into this and read it, you will come out the other side believing it. Because I was a skeptic too.
And well, I think it's knowing it. You come out knowing it rather than believing it. It's a knowledge. I mean, that's the Gnostics was about this inner knowledge, wasn't it? Rather than a belief. That's another of the tricks, isn't it? Moving in from a system of knowledge to a system of belief.
And that's right. Faith is their greatest weapon. Faith in them, faith in religions, faith. Forget faith. Forget faith, forget hope, forget change. It's only thinking, knowledge. Those are what's going to save us.
Yeah. And applying it.
Absolutely.
Yep. Absolutely.
Right. And again, I want to thank you, gentlemen, and I hope the audience got something out of this today, and we hope we can do this again sometime. So,
absolutely.
Coming up next is Nemo De Novo, and again, enjoy our program.
Thanks very much, Jay.
Thank you.